welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well. Looking forward to the show, but I'm a little bummed that the espresso guy's not here.
We'll say yet.
Yet. Maybe he'll stroll in here during the middle of the show, and we'll get him folded. And I was really looking forward to that.
I know. This was, I don't want to plug him if he doesn't show, so never
yeah.
mind.
Yeah, never mind. No, we'll get him in here for too long if it doesn't happen today. But we've got a great show on slate today. First up on Atlanta Business Radio, we're going to get a chance to meet with the proprietor, the Grand Poobah, the chief in charge of Green Machine, Inc., Mr. Davin Green. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, we are delighted to have you. What are you guys out there doing for folks?
Oh, we're doing a lot of things, and it's been a really exciting trip. Now, Green Machine is less than a year old now, and we've already signed a few dozen clients, everything from small business to corporation. And I have a lot of people ask me about that name, too, and we were talking about that before the show. What is Green Machine? What does that mean? Well, my last name is Green, so that's the simplest answer. There's a lot of other things to it, though. This company originally started to support sustainability initiatives, and we still do. It's a really large part of our business. It was just through our reputation through that we gained a lot of small business and corporate clients. So it's kind of grown into a larger meaning, if you will.
But what is the actual service you guys provide?
We provide websites, apps, and online marketing. And more specifically, we come in and do strategy for that. So when a business is looking to really market itself online, we come in and connect the dots and really put together an effective campaign that leverages either a website, an application for mobile phones or devices, or things like social media and some of the new types of marketing.
So has the client changed much? Because it seems like in the old days, the client didn't know anything and knew they didn't know anything. But I wonder sometimes now, because the WordPress and all the blogging and all that and the tweeting.
Yeah, is it like when's that show, Mad Men? It's not like that anymore.
Do they come in and feel like they know more than they really do, and you got to get them back on track, or what's that like?
Oh, it's kind of a wild west. There's a lot of information out there, and a lot of it is incorrect. A lot of it is sort of correct, and it's actually it's something we laugh about a lot, because people will claim themselves, oh, I'm a social media expert or I'm a website expert. And we hear that a lot, and you won't see that on any of our materials. Because honestly, an expert is someone that spent, you know, I think the number, it's like 10,000 hours doing something, honing a craft. That's what makes an expert. The truth is, a lot of these things aren't 10,000 years old. Or, I'm sorry, 10,000 hours old. I mean, that's, you know, that's a little over a year. And these technologies, and especially some of the ones we're leveraging, there's just not enough time for there to be experts on them. So you have to base things on core marketing values and on research. And that's kind of how we take a unique approach to it.
Now, what do you attribute the speed of getting clients in this crowded kind of marketplace?
Well, I attribute that to really what's our mission statement, which is creativity and transparency. The agencies kind of have a stigma of being kind of concealed, like they're doing some sort of magic to produce these things. And it's really not clear what the money is going directly to a lot of times. So our approach is to really make it clear what that money is going towards, what we're basing decisions off of, and why it's effective. And when you add that level of transparency, I mean, it really gives you a competitive advantage over a lot of the agencies. And there is a lot of competition. Atlanta's the number three interactive city in the world. So we've got hundreds. I think the latest estimate was around 600 interactive agencies, or agencies that do websites of the, you know,
in this one town,
in Atlanta.
That's crazy.
That's nuts. I mean, I know we've got a nice startup community. We got a lot of emerging companies, but that's a big number.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
why are there so many? That seems like way too many for this market.
Yeah, definitely heard that. Well, we have Georgia Tech. We've got Art Institute. We've got SCAD. Just these things kind of coming together, and I mean, I think it's a little bit of serendipity too. Atlanta has just kind of gotten the momentum, Vigley and Razorfish and some of these larger agencies kind of set up shop here, and I think that attracted a lot of the satellite agencies. And there's a lot of mom and pop and boutiques on it. We love more than anything, because they do the very specific work, and a lot of times that's what we refer clients out to. But yeah, it's a huge market.
Now, can you walk us through, or maybe the listener through, what an engagement with you looks like? And maybe either take an existing client and share that path, or Stone will make up a good client for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Our process really banks a lot on strategy and on listening. And again, that's one of the, you know, I was in the agency field for about 5 years. And one of the things that was really frustrating to me as a marketing and a strategy background was, you know, telling the customer they needed something before you understand why they need it for. Or better yet, a customer coming to you, especially with all the information out there, and saying, I need an app or I need a website. You know, well, to look them in the eye and say, why? You know, what's the goal here? So that's where we start. We definitely start by trying to determine what the best mode of marketing is, or sales. In some case, we're concentrating just on sales. Is it an application? Is it a web application? Is it a responsive website? You know, what technology really fits that goal best? And to do that, you really have to understand the goal. So a large part of our investment in a project is time spent understanding a goal and translating that to some technology. So our process is very simple. It's listen, strategize, execute. Spend a lot of time listening and integrating ourselves with the workflow of a company and figuring out what their core message is. We strategize on how best to present that message through some online medium, and then we execute that. And that can mean bringing in a design company, bringing in a development company, or we do some of it in-house.
Now, are you getting paid right from go, or is it something that you have to kind of pitch an idea and then they're choosing between agencies?
It's definitely a lot of pitching. That's one of the advantages and disadvantages of a lot of this information being freely available. Is it, in truth, if someone were to sit down and research a lot of this, a small business owner could do a lot of what we do on their own. I mean, that's just kind of the truth of it. And so we come in and make the value proposition of, well, you know, why it makes sense to have someone come in that's got experience in it, why it makes sense to have someone that's got research and that has a core team that's been doing this. And but after we make the pitch, I mean, it's the returns are really quick. I mean, you really see the effectiveness in online marketing. In fact, a business that doesn't do a lot of online marketing, usually any sort of effort online improves business between 13 and 17%, depending on your industry.
It's like the really fat guy right at the front end of the diet loses
right,
a bunch of weight. Right?
Yeah.
That's
true. Yeah.
So you'll partner with these boutique outfits. Like if you were working with us, you might partner with someone who really knows audio. And
absolutely.
They might bring another dimension to things. Do you ever partner with the bigger agencies? Or is that like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I maintain really good relationships with them. We make their job a lot easier because a lot of time agencies are run by designers or developers. You know, Green Machine is run by a business person, you know, and designers and developers, they consider that the muck. Like they don't want anything. They just want to build something, you know, and that's why we love them. But a lot of times you need that kind of that piece to connect the dots with the goal, with whatever they're building, or else, you know, you can get out of hand with functionality and especially budget and time. So they love working with us, and, you know, like I said, we maintain really good relationships with them.
Now, how do you manage that kind of the branding versus generating revenue portion of a website? Because a lot of times a person will say, okay, I want a website, and you're like, oh, you make it all fancy and flashy, and it looks really cool, but it never drives down to either getting them a client or moving them to engage in any kind of constructive way that'll move the needle in terms of sales.
Absolutely. And I can tell you that any small business owner that's worked with an agency or that has built a website has encountered that, where they either ended up with something that was really flashy or, you know, even not so flashy, but it just didn't do anything.
Right. Like it looks, you know, cool. If you look at it, you're like, oh, that looks nice. But like it never engages a person or moves them through the buying cycle.
Absolutely. So that's why we start with that listening and strategy before we touch any code or any colors or move pixels around. It starts with that strategy. And part of that strategy is the interface of, okay, how does a customer get from A to B? What is your call to action? What is your conversion process? And we don't touch anything until we know the answers to that.
Now, is there a sweet spot for you, a certain size of company, or are you finding yourself sort of gravitating to certain types of industries or sectors?
I would say small to medium business is definitely what we like working with a lot. We're really attractive to corporations right now. We've been working with Coke and Motorola. But a lot of times what we really enjoy doing and where we really see a lot of the bigger returns is with a small to medium-sized business. And I'm talking about a business that is usually a little larger than local. Some of our main clients right now are businesses like Natural Awakenings or, local franchises like local restaurant franchises.
Well, I bet franchises are nice, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's some replication. There's some economies of scale, but then there's got to be some replication of the revenue.
Absolutely. Franchises are particularly effective because we can test it out at one. You know, so it's a large corporation, but we can localize it and test it out at one location. And especially any business owner that's kind of gone through the process that's encountered some of the questions you guys are bringing up. I mean, that's really when we're best to come in, is because you've already kind of been burned by some decision gone awry online, and we're really good at coming in and making sense of that.
Now, what about this mobile thing? Do you think that's a fad, or you think that's going to stick around a little bit?
Well, I was actually having a roundtable at the Metro Atlanta Chamber about this last week. I hear a lot, very often, a business coming up and saying, we need an app. You know, and that's the biggest that's where I look at them and I go, why? Like, what are you accomplishing? And so I think mobile, yes, mobile is huge. Mobile will be huge. And if it's not part of your marketing strategy over the next 2 to 3 years, you're setting yourself up for failure. Apps, though, are a bubble. In fact, some of the recent research showing that 80%, up to 80% of apps are not profitable. So if you're investing in designing a native application for a smartphone, you better be providing some sort of extra value that a user can't get from a website or a web application. And that's probably the biggest mistake I see, is investing in an app before understanding what the conversion, what the call to action, what's your return on that app. Because you're right, it's really easy to get kind of caught up in mobile, and we have to be mobile, and you know.
Well, it seems like every few months, then there's something new that's like the must-have thing that your business. If you're not in this world, then you're missing out this huge opportunity.
Oh yeah, it's those experts telling you that.
Right.
Yeah.
So your advice is then invest in making your website mobile friendly, but maybe not necessarily an app for your website or business.
Absolutely. I'd say for most businesses, especially in the small to medium business range, that's where the investment should be. And there's a technology which I encourage you guys to Google, which is called responsive web design. And it's something we push a lot. It's kind of a buzzword right now. The technology has been around for a while. Just utilizing it in a marketing fashion is fairly new. But responsive just means building a website that changes itself depending on the screen size. So you can build a website that adapts itself to a 4-inch screen, adapts itself to a 7-inch screen, 12-inch screen, on up to a 40-inch screen. And it will actually change the interface and change the user experience based on that. And that's one website.
So, and that's a whole different ballgame than a site and a mobile site. This is a whole different level of...
Yeah. Yeah, if you're doing anything or if you're just getting started, mobile site is great because at least it gives you some presence.
Right.
On mobile, but responsive is really it's the greatest return because you're investing in one thing that kind of captures a lot of different user experiences.
So I'm trying to get my arms around the whole sales and marketing side of your thing. So what a great franchise town, right? So you go after a Zaxby's or an Arby's. There's just a ton of franchises. So you want to go after Zaxby's. How do you even get on their radar? Because you're one of a gazillion. For those of us that are not in the
600.
Know.
It's just 600.
But, I mean, you know, it's G. So you go to the yellow pages and you're like 22 pages
He's
in.
He's five behind.
So help us understand how you even go to market and get on their radar.
Absolutely. Well, it's a lot of internal marketing, and we do invest a lot in internal marketing.
Your website better be good.
Yeah, no kidding.
It is. We're actually in the middle of a rebrand, so there's going to be some exciting changes on there pretty soon. I would say, especially getting in front of a franchise, we don't go after the corporation. So we don't step into Zaxby's Inc. or, you know, the Zaxby's in an industrial park. We step into the restaurant. And a lot of times we're meeting those people just because they're places we like to go. Natural Awakenings is a magazine franchise that I like to read. So I just contact them like, I like your magazine. I think you could improve in these ways. You know, I mean, and franchises, especially people that own their own franchises, if it's one or two, there's a lot of passion there. So it's really easy to come in, and like I said, the returns are really quick, so it's a fairly easy sell. And then, one franchise talks to another, and eventually you get to corporate, and corporate realizes the value of spreading it to the other.
So you have kind of a bottom-up philosophy in terms of marketing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we definitely, our target is the individual. over, you know, going after a corporation.
Now, what's your point of entry, like your first sale to them?
Well, that depends. It definitely depends on what their biggest need is. I would say right now, social media marketing is huge. Everyone, that's kind of the thing right now that everyone's wondering about. So it's really easy for us to come in and say, well, let's put together a social media strategy for you. Because those are honestly, I mean, you're really just replicating a core marketing value. I mean, social media is not some big unknown thing. I mean,
well, it is around here.
So now, like, this would, you would charge them X number of dollars for a meeting and then kind of develop a strategy. And then the execution of that strategy would be another fee. Is that how it progresses?
Not usually. Usually what we do is we come in and we spend a little bit of time with them to make sure, one, that we're a good fit, because that's not always the case. You know,
right.
If we're not a good fit, we'll make a referral. But we come in, especially, like I said, if, for instance, we've identified social media as a great place for them to really be impactful with very little investment. We'll come in and spend a couple hours with them and just give them some pointers, let them see the fruition of those kind of pointers, and then they come back to us and we'll do a larger partnership. And we do pursue projects on our partnership agreement. So sometimes there's accountability to us too, you know, especially we work with a lot of startups too, because we're open to that, because we're open to kind of revenue shares and placing accountability on us.
What would be something that you would be accountable for?
Well, for example, working with a franchise, if we come in and we're building out, say, a marketing platform to better market a franchise through a custom WordPress installation or something along those lines, we may build it at a subsidized cost for that individual franchise under the agreement that they'll recommend it to other ones, you know, and then we can spread and help spread the franchise or spread the platform or what we build to the campaign through the franchise or through the community.
But do you have metrics where you have to hit certain numbers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We definitely place goals. And in fact, the beginning of the listening or the strategy process is to place goals on, okay, how many people do we want to reach? What do we want our market penetration to be, our conversion rate or click-through rate? We identify those things before we do anything.
So I want you to weigh in, if you're willing, on this whole SEO thing, because it's got me absolutely upside down. And I'll just tell you straight up, part of me says, look, if it's something you can manipulate, how important and valuable is it in the first place? But, I mean, obviously, there's something to it. You can't just ignore it. What advice, if any, do you find yourself giving these small and medium-sized businesses when it comes to incorporating some sort of SEO strategy into their overarching plan?
Absolutely. And that's a question I get a lot is SEO. There's a lot of mystery surrounding it. And the best advice I can give you is to don't think of SEO. Like, we're big proponents of not using acronyms just because I feel like it just confuses things. SEO, what that means is that's how a search engine sees your site. Okay. And as technology progresses, as Google, well, the search engine, we'll take that for example. As Google gets better at being a search engine, it becomes closer to being more like a human. What would a human like to see? Okay, when you type in a word, what does a human want to see? And it's getting closer and closer to understanding that. So if your website is something that a person is relevant to what a person is searching for, you're golden on SEO because the technology is only going to get better. And as long as you're providing good content that a person actually wants to see, your rankings will improve.
That's really helpful framing for me. I really,
you
first
like
of
that?
All, well, I like it and I believe in it. That makes sense to me, as
right.
opposed to all this manipulative
this
stuff.
Magic and meta keywords. Yeah. And yeah. Now, that stuff is important, but it's really nominal to just providing good content. So you guys already ahead of the game because this is great content. You know, so all you got to do is make this available.
Are you saying it's great content because you're the guest on the show?
It's great content today.
Yeah, right now.
Content.
Yeah, for this hour. It's awesome. Well, just making that content available, and then there's a couple of little things you should do, which most people already are, because WordPress and things like that do it for you, you know, without you having to do a lot. Just presenting that content in a way that's easy for the search engine to find. But what I would concentrate on is if someone tells you you need to invest in SEO, chances are what they mean or what you should invest in is good content. So get a good copywriter. Start broadcasting your ideas and putting it in a way that's attractive to people so they'll share it. You know, I mean, those are the things that improve your SEO.
Kevin, as soon as the show's over, I want you to go get me HEO.com, Human Experience Optimization. That's what we're going to go with. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So as far as pricing, the investment that it takes, it strikes me this might be all over the map. It seems like you're pretty creative. You're a deal maker. You're working with the startups. You're working with the big outfits. It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing, is it? You're really helping. That's part of your engagement that Lee was asking about, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we use a lot of metaphors for trying to nail down the price. It's like going to a realtor and saying, "How much is a house?" You know,
right.
I mean, well, what kind of house? You know, I did want to come in here and give a ballpark. For most businesses we work with, if we're doing a platform, so if we're doing an optimized website, usually falls between about $5,000 and $15,000 to build out a website. If we're doing a marketing campaign, that's all over the board. For a small business that's kind of just getting into it, it's usually less than $5,000. If you're really looking to engage or you're looking for a national campaign or something like that, those can go up into the six figures.
Now, so, I mean, a campaign is defined by also the length of time of the campaign?
That's correct, yep. And you're right, Stone. We are very creative in how we work with companies. So if there's a partnership agreement, we price, this is how I describe it, we price based on the value of what we're building and the value of the client. For instance, some franchises like the magazine publisher we're working with, that's a huge opportunity for advertisement for us. And their core market is very much in line with what we're looking for. So we're doing it at a subsidized cost. Yeah, I mean, so we definitely look at the value of relationships over, you know, charging by hourly rates.
Well, no, your whole thing is very relationship, or much more than I guess I originally anticipated. In my mind, it was more of a transactional business, but I'm seeing from talking with you, this is a high relationship business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these things are progressing. You can't just build a website and expect that to do the work for you for 5 years.
Template number three. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you're kind of refreshing your website. How often should a company be doing that?
I would say at the absolute minimum every 2 years. And that number, that length of time is only getting smaller. We usually revisit ours. Like I said, we're less than a year old. We've revisited our website 3 times. You know, I mean, and that's, of course, we have the resources to do that. but I would say that your message should be consistent, but your experience should be continually improving.
I agree.
Do you write anything down?
I wrote all kinds of stuff down. What's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more?
GreenMachineInc.com. You can get in touch with me pretty easily there. Like I said, I encourage things I talked about, go and Google them. There's a lot of information on this, and you know, it definitely makes the experience better if you guys come in educated, you know, and then we can just kind of top it off.
Can I get your app at the iTunes store?
We actually don't have an app.
Really?
Yeah.
I bet you have a mobile-friendly website then.
We do. Yep. Yep, we have a responsive website. So if you guys want to see what that looks like, you can go play around with it.
Well, I do. I want to get in there and dig around a little bit, and I think it would be fun to have you come back sometime with a client
through an
engagement. Is that magazine here in town?
Yeah, they are.
That would be fun.
Yeah, they're a national franchise. One of the larger ones is here in town, though. So, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, you up for that? That'd make it fun. All right. Hey, well, thanks a lot for coming in, man. This was a very informative conversation. And HEO.com, Kevin, on GoDaddy. We're going for that. Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us for a little while?
I'd love to, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have a gentleman from High Touch High Tech, Mr. Perry Cantrell. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. You were doing a lot of nodding over there. You must have liked something you heard.
You know, it's an opportunity to learn something. So I'm listening to this. Davin and I were talking in the green room before we came in here. So I'm asking him what he does, and also I'm learning while I'm sitting here.
So now, what do you do? What's your high-touch, high-tech?
We are a private educational business.
There you go.
The gist.
I'm very pro-private education.
You had him at private.
Yeah.
Believe me.
The gist of our business is going into schools and offering schools and presenting in-school science-based field trips. We save the schools the money and the insurance cost of having to load the kids up, get the bus, go
bus
somewhere.
Companies hate you.
The insurance. I was in public education for 8 years, field trips, off campus, you know, That's what makes – I did not have gray hair until I started working with other people's children.
It's like a staycation.
Yeah, but it's really neat. We go in and, you know, we wear our lab coats and we bring all the equipment in. We do sessions, you know, one class at a time, present whatever material the school has contracted with us to present, vocabulary, concepts, and then for the biggest part of the time we're there, the students are using our equipment to actually have things in their hands to do the science. Instead of reading it in a book or seeing it on a video, they're actually seeing how things work. And with the current economic situation and the government cuts in education, schools don't have the tools that we can offer them to actually put things in the child's hands to do things.
So how do they fund you?
The different ways the parents pay. Just like if you have children and your children have brought home the form for a field trip and they say it's going to cost X number of dollars for them to make this trip.
Right.
Sometimes the PTA, PTO pays for it. Grant money, we are approved for Title I funds and just whatever the creative way they can come up with. We actually work with the Title I schools. We've been in very close contact with the state Title I division to help schools get their paperwork done to get the funds approved.
Right.
And we have one of our staff members has written grants for years, and she works with schools to help them write grants to get money.
So that's part of your service to the
school?
Yeah,
that's part of it.
Help them fund it or figure out how to fund it?
Exactly. You know, and we have one school in particular that, I mean, it comes from everywhere, and especially a big city like Atlanta. We have a school we go to where one of the local professional athletes writes a check to the school every year because that's where his kids go, and they choose to use that money to have us come in for every grade level in their school multiple times a year.
Wow.
Now, so did the schools jump on this real fast, or did it take some doing and some song and dance for a little while?
It took some doing. I've only been in it this is my seventh year in it. The company has been in Atlanta for 17 years and started with our owner working out of her apartment, just going and meeting people face-to-face, trying to get her foot in the door. We're at the point now, we've grown now during our busy time of the season after the first of the year. We'll be sending out, 12 to 15 teachers a day.
Wow, really?
Going to different schools.
All science?
All science.
Cool.
Yeah, grades K through 8.
Were you the one, I think I have a kid and he was in middle school last year, that they threw stuff on the floor and something?
It depends on what school he was at. It might have been.
So what would be, it was...
We are just entering the middle school market, right. So we've been very few middle schools. I don't teach all the time anymore, but up until last year.
But it was some dramatic thing.
Very dramatic thing. We go to a middle school in Alpharetta every year,
right,
and do a human anatomy and physiology class for their seventh grade every year. We go in, we talk about body systems, and our thing is to get stuff in the kids' hands. So we bring in brains and eyeballs and hearts and stomachs and guts.
Real brains.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, when you hold up a cow heart and you look at the top of it and you have the superior and inferior vena cava in the aorta, you can't tell which is which just looking at it. So when you tell a kid that if you want to know which is which, just stick your finger down in there, and if it stops at the top, it's a vein. And if your finger goes all the way to the bottom, that's the aorta. Kids love that.
Well, see, that's science. That's learning. They remember stuff
they do.
Like that,
they
right?
Yeah, and...
It might get them more engaged in science because that's a real gap now. Kids aren't really embracing science.
Well, the thing about science is this. America has a history of being, has had a history of being the innovators and coming up with the new things and the world following us. And, people say, well, that's what we have to do. So what are we going to do to increase education? Well, let's cut education funding. That's a good way to start. So what we want to do is enthuse. I had a little girl ask me yesterday at the school I was at when the class was over, and I asked her, I said, does anybody have a question before we go? Because we're done. This little girl raised her hand, and she was a second grader, raised her hand. I said, what is it, honey? And she said, do you think I can grow up to be a scientist? I mean, children have to be enthused about this.
You'd think with the Big Bang Theory, they'd see women scientists, so they wouldn't.
No, the woman on there is the cute chick. All the smart guys.
The Blossom Girls.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But no, we've had the tag guys in here. We've had the guy with the STEM effort.
Right, Michael Robertson.
Yeah, Michael. Mm-hmm. And they're constantly talking about particularly young females, but really kids, period, amen.
To get involved in science, technology, engineering, and math.
You have to put something in their hands. See, now, and what else we do, in addition to going into the schools and doing field trips, we do week-long summer science camps. We had 6 locations around the Atlanta area last year. The children in the age group that I did last year, I was doing rising 3rd and 4th graders. So these kids came in, and we did a forensics camp.
Like CSI,
yeah, just except more realistic, not like what you see on television.
That's not realistic?
Not at all. We are very fortunate that due to some of the relationships of the people at work, we have an in with some local law enforcement who actually let myself and one of our other guys go into their labs and see how things really get done. And we talked to them. They gave us some ideas on how to build a program that children could do.
Right.
And we take it into the schools. But for the summer camp, we talked about different kinds of science, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and how they could apply to forensics. And then Friday, the kids come in and they gather their own evidence out of a crime scene we've set up, and they use the science to analyze the evidence to find out who the bad guy is.
How cool is that?
Yeah. So it's just all about kids. The whole secret... We talk about it all the time. The whole secret is to teach a child something without them realizing that they're learning.
Right.
That's the whole thing.
Now, is it something that when you, especially when you're being funded by the school and not the kid, like how does the kid know to tell the parent, like, hey, I want a birthday party, a science birthday party or something like that?
ScienceMadeFunATL.net.
You do those kind of things?
Yeah,
birthday
we do
parties.
Yeah,
camps.
We do birthday parties, camps. We have tinkered with Saturday science programs where we would go to a place that would let us rent some space cheap, and we would go in and have a Saturday morning science from 9 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon. So, and which works pretty well between around Thanksgiving and Christmas when mom and dad need to dump the kids,
right?
You know, to get some business done.
Is there any kind of mythbustery thing you do?
The older kids really get into Mythbusters in the week-long summer science camps. Our upper level, the rising 5th and 6th graders, they during lunch, while we're sitting there, they're sitting there eating their sandwich at lunch, they'll watch a Mythbusters. And whatever Mythbusters that scientist Q does, he's our R&D coordinator here. He's the 12-year-old boy that never grew up.
Right.
All right? Wants to know how everything works. He'll show a Mythbusters because that episode of Mythbusters will tie into what he's doing in his camp that day. I mean, I want to be in his camp. You know,
what are some of the examples of that?
A couple years ago, they actually grew silver.
Silver does grow on trees.
Not trees, yeah.
Can grow it.
He's a chemical geologist,
right?
By education, and they do some really neat stuff. They grow crystals. He tries every so often. The kids will make their own claymation movies to understand the technology behind how that's done. Burns the DVDs. The kid takes their movie home. You know, at the end of the week.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like this is so wide open. The resources available to you and the knowledge base, you could create a gifted program. You could create a program for the stones of the world.
We
just need the basics, right?
You adjust to your audience. Yeah. All of our scientists that go out to teach either have an education or a science background. Everybody that we ever send into a classroom is a degree professional. Most of us, like I say, have experience in the classroom. I taught public school for 8 years before I started doing this. And we start K-8. We'll take your little kindergartner, their first month of school when they're learning what their 5 senses are, and we'll teach them about hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and touching, and bring equipment in so they actually see things, make tuning forks, coke, salt, sugar, taste things. You do the whole thing so they actually touch it up to in the 8th grade. We will take a class in if they want. They're doing, what is 8th grade doing now? Physical science. If they need to know about electricity, we'll take electricity in. They'll build circuit boards. They'll figure out the difference between a series and a parallel circuit because they've got to build one to get into. And we have all this stuff So, like I said, the schools don't necessarily have enough equipment.
And are the teachers cool with this? Do they feel threatened? Are they glad to have you come in for the most part?
One less period they have to teach this week.
If we feel confident that if we can ever get a teacher to see us,
right,
that they will love us.
Because if I'm not threatened and I'm a competent teacher, I want the best for my kids.
Right. You want a good, you know, teachers that do this and real. And every teacher works way too hard. I mean, I'll just tell you that. They do. Public school teachers are way too much is on their plate. They need as much help as they can get to get the children, because they have pressure on them because of the testing. Then they're held accountable for that. So they need all the help they can get. When we come in with things they don't have and with expertise that they may not have because right. they, you know, everybody didn't go to school to learn science. You do what you have to do.
My baseball coach was my science teacher.
Yeah, okay.
That's awesome.
You know,
that explains a lot.
He read the chapter the night before.
Right. You know, a 12 to 6 curve's going to break down. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, when the moon does this. Right. So, you know, when we come in, the teachers are tickled to death. I was at a school yesterday. It's the first time they had ever seen High Touch High Tech. And it was very simply like being a rock star. You know, the administrators came in to see what was going on in the class, walk around. The kids freaked them out because I was doing the body class with them, and the kids were trying to get the principal to hold the hearts and all. He didn't want any part of that. But, you know, and I told him, you know, if you can arrange time to have your other teachers have a break and come in and see what we're doing, please send them in. If you got any parents that want to know what your kids are doing, send them in. I did a class 3 years ago. It was the first year that we had gone into Henry County, and we had told them, you know, we'd like to get into your school system and see. So, yes, please invite, you know, parents.
Everybody,
if,
yeah.
What if they want to come see. I did a class with 28 kids and 14 parents.
Right.
You know, so, yeah. I mean, the more people that see us, the better we feel.
Now, you guys have a website?
We do, sciencemadefunatl.net.
Now, Davin, what would you do to kind of jazz up that website? I know you haven't seen it. Put some pressure on you.
What's the answer,
Dan? This is an interesting subject matter that I would think would lend well to a website.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd ask Perry, who are your core audience going to that? Is it administrators of schools? Is it students? Is it parents?
It's parents, teachers, and administrators. That's our core audience, yeah.
I gotcha. Okay, well, if you're looking at something like that, I mean, in your conversion process, what's their, what do you eventually want them to do? Is it call you, email you?
Yeah, we want them to call. Well, they can actually make a reservation online through our website. When you go in, you look at the homepage, the school programs are listed, the birthday party programs are listed. We've got like 12 different birthday parties. You can get a scientist to come out, and you can dig for gemstones, or we can blow stuff up.
I'd have written a check for that in a heartbeat. When Katie was in middle school, I would have written a check for that so fast.
Yeah, just, right. You know, you got all these choices for what you want, you know, what do you want to do. You can register for the summer camps, you know, year-round on the websites. We have the information up there of what we're going to be doing each year.
Right, but isn't that, it seems like what he does is very visual, and there's a lot of action, so I would think that there's a lot of material for a website.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. You probably got some insanely great content, like videos of these students.
And happy camper
customers. Oh, yeah, right. You know, little kid, I don't remember, the little boy, the picture that sticks in my mind more than anything else is when the little boy, we were studying light, and boy had a concave and convex lens and held them up to his eyes like this. So one eye is just huge and the other one's like this.
Right. I would imagine there's just tons of content for a company like theirs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything, what we do, our slowest part of the year is the month of August because we finish our summer camps in July. And we
right.
really don't.
School hasn't started.
We really don't. School doesn't get cranked up and we really don't start going into schools until around Labor Day.
Right.
During the month of August, our core teaching staff is in the office every day. Scott Allen is our program director. His responsibility is to make sure that our programs meet the Georgia standards.
Oh,
so for
okay.
every grade level, we have a program that will address as many standards within that field as is possible to do in 90 minutes. Like I said, George Quadrino is the R&D guy. George is the guy that figures out, okay, how can we show the kids this concept in a fun way? And then our marketing person, Beverly Graham, works on, okay, I can do this, we can do this. And Bev is one of those people that you know, I can say, Beverly, I need to show this concept to a kid, and I can't figure out what I need to show them. So give her 5 minutes, and she comes back with five different experiments you can do to do this. And
so
then
you have a great team.
We do. We have a great team, and I kind of stay out of their way and let them work and sort of make sure, okay, this is your strength, you do this. This is your strength, you do this. I'm going to stay out of your way. Let me know when you're done.
Now, are you part of a larger organization, or are you
yes,
just here in
we town? Are. We are a franchise.
It's a franchise.
It is a franchise.
But you must have the latitude to do a lot of stuff
on
your own.
We do. We are the most successful franchise that High Touch High Tech has. High Touch High Tech was started by a disgruntled high school biology teacher who just got fed up with the fact that kids were getting into high school and all they knew about science was reading something in a book and answering a question. They never had anything in their hands. Right. So he had the idea to start young, putting things in people's hands. There's, I don't know, maybe 15 franchises in nationwide and half a dozen overseas.
And this one's been going here
this one's
for
been
a while?
Here for 17 years.
Oh, so they must have been one of the early
ones. Yes. Yeah. Our owners, Helene Nelms, went to the University of Florida, wanted to be a teacher, did her student teaching and said, ugh.
Not for me.
Don't know about this. Let's go into business. And then she heard about this idea. Right. Family works to work together to start the franchise. She started out of her apartment when she moved to Atlanta and has built it to what it is now.
Good stuff.
What a fantastic idea. You guys are just taking the ball and running.
Man, I wish I would have thought of it. You know?
Do one for social studies.
I'm actually working on that. We want to, we're educators that some of us, I have a business background before I went into education, so I teach and work on the business side of it. But, it is a business. We use it to buy groceries. But we all have, like I said, we've all been teachers. And people, your good teachers get into teaching because that's what they want to do.
Right.
That's what they want to do. They want to help kids, and that's what we want to do. We want to help kids, and, like I said, I want to be able to buy a steak when I want to and take my wife on a nice vacation occasionally, and everything's good.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get you some more business. Let's share your coordinates with our listeners.
All right. We can be reached by phone at 770-667-9443. The website is sciencemadefunatl.net. And, they were asking me in the office, why are you doing business radio? There's no teachers going to be listening. but to people that are listening, you may be the spouse of a teacher. You may have a kid.
Safe bet.
Got a kid. This is something you need to check into. Go to our website. Talk to the educators that your children are involved with. It's something the children enjoy, and they learn stuff.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.